Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Hello again, everybody. And with us now for a few minutes, the now official Republican nominee for mayor of New York, Joe Loda. Mr. Loda, congratulations on primary day and welcome back to WNYC.
Brian, thank you very, very much. And it's great to be with you and your listeners.
Now, since New York City has 6-1 registered Democrats to Republicans, let me start with the Daily News article today that says you're launching a group called Democrats for Loda. Do you think you can appeal to a crossover vote?
The number of Democrats that are coming to me, voluntarily coming to me, talking about wanting to vote for me is extraordinary. It's been happening since late last week, even before the primary results came in. And I'm very excited about that. The most important thing that I can do to be able to win, I'm going to need as many crossover votes as possible. And I want to continue, the streak of independent leadership in the city of New York.
And to those who haven't come to you voluntarily, but are Democrats with maybe an open mind, how would you start to make your case?
I'll start to make my case about what my vision is for the city of New York. Newspapers have also been talking about how stark a difference it'll be between what a Loda government would look like compared to a de Blasio government. And, we don't know if it's going to be Bill de Blasio yet, and let's hold that aside. But there will be a stark difference as an approach. Our approach is towards education and what we want to do in education. Our purpose, our approach regarding public safety, our approach regarding education of our children, they are very, very different. And I'm going to make the argument about how I'm going to be able to propel the city forward by changing a lot of what's been going on in the government over the last 12 to 20 years. I want an open, inclusive government. I want to be able to start town hall meetings again. I will have one every month. I want to be the mayor who's known as the person who listens to New Yorkers. And I really mean it. I emphasize this in my talk and my speech on Tuesday night. I want to listen to all New Yorkers. That's how good decisions are made. Decisions shouldn't be made in City Hall and pushed out. Decisions need to emanate from the grassroots level on up.
Twitter tells me that you didn't like the part of that Daily News article that said you were reaching out to Al Sharpton. What's true there?
Well, I haven't seen Twitter, and I don't know why anybody would ever say that. I've talked to Al Sharpton in the past, and I will talk to Al Sharpton in the future. If anybody would be upset with that story. Look, my greatest strength is that, and Brian, you know this, my greatest strength is I will talk to everybody. I see no reason to exclude anybody. If I'm going to be the mayor of all New Yorkers, I've got to be able to talk to all New Yorkers.
Let me play you a clip of Bill de Blasio, about 40 seconds from his primary night speech, where he lays out some particulars, and get your reaction to one or two things here. He sets this up by referring to his theme of people in the other New York.
A New York where nearly half our citizens are living at or near the poverty line, where luxury condos had replaced community hospitals, where proactive policing had somehow slipped quietly into racial profiling, where too many mothers and fathers feared that their daughters and sons would never achieve the very thing we want most for our kids, that they get the education they need to pave the way for a better life. That day, we resolved to do something about this tale of two cities.
Bill de Blasio from primary night. Obviously, from the election results, that message has resonance with many Democrats. To what extent do you acknowledge that many New Yorkers feel like they are living in that other New York?
I think the way it's being portrayed, Tale of Two Cities, is being done to separate classes. What we need to do is not divide the city. What we need to do is to unite the city. And then we start talking about what we're going to do about how we make the city affordable, how we can create affordable housing, how do we educate our children. I think the old textbook way of divide then conquer is absolutely wrong. This city needs to be unified to move forward. That's what I'll do in this campaign. I will talk about my ideas regarding education and public safety and affordability, but I will not, under any circumstances, get into a situation or buy into the belief that we need to separate our classes, regardless of how you want to define it. That, I believe, is instinctively wrong, and it's the old textbook approach. And if he wants to go out and do it, I'll call him on it.
He would probably say that the divide is just reality on the ground, and that his policy seeks to minimize the divide and therefore unify the city. What would you say to that?
You don't unify the city by separating people. You unify the city by talking positively, by talking about how you're going to do things, and take what I believe. Look, calling it a tale of two cities, that level of invective has no place in any campaign. At all. It's, you know, it might sound like a great jargon piece, but let me tell you, it divides people. What we really need to do is to work together and provide a solution, not separating people and then saying that the ends justify the means. Words are important. Words that are used are important. And dividing people is absolutely not the greatest way to help the city of New York.
Republican mayoral nominee Joe Loda with us for another few minutes. And let me just pick up on one of the issues that he mentioned in that clip that doesn't get all that much attention, but that he made one of the hallmarks of his primary campaign. He even got arrested over it. That line that says, where luxury condos had replaced community hospitals. Do you find that issue to be a real one?
Of course it's real. It's my local hospital. I live four blocks away from Long Island College Hospital. And I agree that what's going on in the healthcare world needs to be addressed. Bill has been passionate about this, and I'm thankful for that as a resident in Brooklyn. We have a situation in the city where hospitals, 20-some-odd hospitals, have been closed. I think it's over the last 5 or 6 years. You know where you don't hear about hospitals closing? Mm-hmm. In the Bronx. There's some leadership in the Bronx, especially in the healthcare side of it, where Montefiore Hospital has opened up urgent care centers so that the people all throughout the Bronx have access to good healthcare, and it's a feeder system into the hospital system. Whether or not the people actually go to Montefiore or they go to Jacoby Hospital or Lincoln Hospital, the last two being Health and Hospital Corporation hospitals that are directly run by the mayor of New York. We really need to focus in this city on making sure that hospitals are successful. We're going to need to do it by making sure that they're not standalone and independent. It appears in this country, based on the way reimbursements are paid and the way federal Medicare and Medicaid reimbursements are concerned, as well as private insurance, that a small standalone hospital cannot survive. They need to be part of a larger system. The Montefiore example up in the Bronx is a perfect example of how you can have good health care in a community, regardless of where the community is or the makeup. And we need to follow that example. We need to make sure that happens in Brooklyn. We've had significant closings of hospitals in Queens. We now have a situation in the Rockaways where the next hospital is about to close. This issue is an important one.
The Post today reports that you're setting up a national PAC to raise money from supporters nationwide, and that David Koch has already given you a six-figure donation. Are you worried that a Koch brothers-funded campaign could be toxic to potential crossover Democrats?
I haven't read that article, but I do know that an independent expenditure organization is out there, and one of the Kochs has given to it. I don't know who has put that together. I'm not involved in that. And they're people who are concerned. Look, the Supreme Court of the United States has given everybody a First Amendment right of freedom of speech to spend political money any way they want. Whether you agree with it or not, it's the letter of the law today. I am not going to coordinate my campaign with any outside groups. I am going to do my own campaigning, and this idea that I'm coordinating with anybody in the IE is absolutely false.
By the way, I see the Post has nicknamed you J-Lo. Are you going to run with that?
I've noticed that headline the other day. They did it again today, huh? All right, I'll take it. I like Jennifer Lopez. If she doesn't mind me being called J-Lo, I have no problem with it.
They did at least get the H in there in your version of J-Lo. So you want to say anything? I'll let you say anything you want in our last 30 seconds or so before you got to go.
Brian, I'm looking forward to a very vigorous debate. We have, what, about 56, 55 days left to go. I want to make sure, you know, the other side gets their gets named immediately or as soon as possible so that we can have this vigorous campaign. New Yorkers deserve to hear the issues. They deserve to hear the differences. And I'm looking forward to an energizing campaign. It's going to be what I call a sprinting marathon over the next 2 months.
And we look forward to talking to you more during that campaign and doing a call-in segment with you. And we appreciate your time today. Joe Lota, thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it.